This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
It is the World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Big thank you to the gang of Generation Next for another entertaining show. Tonight, folks, we are venturing to India. Think about this. What would it be like if, here in Australia, homosexuality was illegal but not enforced? What lasting effect would that have on a generation of gays and lesbians trying to find their place in society? What if, after a hard-fought victory to decriminalise homosexuality, there was a push to take your basic rights away again? And would your parents be willing to speak up for you and your gay rights in a country where homosexuality is still seen as taboo? We're exploring all of those things tonight as we speak with Arvind Naran. He is from the Alternative Law Reform and representing a group of organisations in India called Voices Against 377. He was the lawyer who successfully brought the case to decriminalise homosexuality in India in 2009 and is currently leading the defence against an appeal that seeks to repeal those laws. As always, we love hearing from you and being part of our show, so you can send us an SMS on 0427JOY949, email us in the studio on air at joy.org.au. We have Fernando on the front desk. He's on 1300JOY949, and we are live on Facebook. Now, I think we've got some pretty funky music from India tonight.
We have got a bit of funky music. We've got a bit of electronica coming up first. This is Bali Sagu, and he's actually a British Indian record producer from Birmingham. So let's hear a bit of Terry Akiandar. We might skip straight into fun, fast facts. So same-sex marriage is not legal in India. But in 2011, two women had their marriage recognised by a court. Not only that, one of the women, Savita, was forced to marry against her will and she was granted divorce. And then her marriage was approved to her partner, Veena. That's quite incredible, I think.
I know. It's a very progressive judge, I think, that would come out of a regional court and say, hey, you know, this isn't something that's allowed in the rest of the country, but I think it's okay.
Yeah, weird. That's in a regional court as well.
I read, though, that these two women had to be put into a safe house for a period of time as they were receiving threats from their families and other terrible things. But apparently, according to my news source, their families have now accepted them, which is lovely, and their marriage still stands.
Oh, that's excellent. So homosexual intercourse is still a criminal offence. Was still a criminal offence until 2009.
Until 2009, when this case was brought by the lawyer and also a group of lawyers and organisations in India called Voices Against 377. And here they talked to the Delhi High Court, who found that carnal intercourse against the order of nature was no longer the go for illegality in India, and that LGBT people should be able to live their lives free from discrimination.
Excellent. So 377 is actually 377 of the law that that you just mentioned, carnal intercourse against the order of nature.
Yes, and it is, as so many of the sodomy laws in ex-colonial countries are, it was a throwback from British colonial rule imposed in 1860, because apparently Britain thought that India was a bit morally lax in terms of sexuality.
Come on, Britain. Lift your game. Now, there's also another interesting fact about India. In 1994, India recognised transgender people, which are often referred to as hijras, as a third sex. So they were granted voting rights as a third sex.
I know. And whereas Australia has only just introduced the right, for example, for trans-identified people to have an X in their birth certificate, but this was a good, 20 years earlier than that when such a progressive law came into play. And it's important to note that Hijras in India are one type of, one group in the transgender community, usually the trans woman community, and were also central to this case, which is quite unusual, because often the transgender community can be left out of cases involving the removal of sodomy laws. You know, usually the focus is on homosexuality. But in this case, apparently, transgender people were so central to queer civil society in India that in the judgment, the rights of transgender people really came out, which is quite important to have those statements there by these very eminent judges.
Yeah, and that was quite a long time ago,
1994.
So, but in 2012, there was a bit of argy-bargy going on with the Supreme Court and the central government, where two judges actually came out and said, we've got to decriminalise the anti-gay laws. And then the central government came out and said, no, it's immoral and against social order. And then the High Court said back to them, make up your mind.
Make up your mind. And that's currently what's happening at the moment. India is making up its mind in the highest appeals court in the country. And Arvind, who we'll hear in a little bit, will talk a bit about this. So at the moment, there is a group of mainly religious groups and one government group, a child welfare group of the government, who are now bringing an appeal to try and overturn this decision in India. And that's currently pending, and apparently a decision will be reached in the next few months. So hopefully there will not be a big backward step for Indian civil society and for Indian LGBT people.
Now, Chris, you just mentioned religion, and over 93% of the population identify with a religion of some sort. Over 80% are Hindu, and 13% are Islam, only 2% Christian, others are Sikhism, Buddhism and Jainism. And this is an interesting fact. The world has 7 billion people. India has 1.36 billion people. China has 1.36 billion people. Just pipped at the post. Was India at 1.23 billion. Guess who comes in number three? I was really surprised at this.
Indonesia?
They're number four, but the US.
Really?
With 316 million. So a bit of a difference from 1.36 billion.
Wow.
But yeah, that's a big jump, isn't it? From the two biggest, most populous countries in the world.
Wow, and it kind of boggles the mind to think that a legal change like this in any country would be celebrated, but in a country as big as India, the sheer number of people that it could affect in a positive way is pretty amazing.
It's huge, yeah.
I mean, it could actually be affecting more people than the total population of some of our countries.
Yeah, yeah.
exactly. Absolutely. So there are still no legal adoption rights in India. The military are still, I think they're a bit don't ask, don't tell. And there are no anti-discrimination laws against gay discrimination either.
And so I think India sits in this very funny place that you find, perhaps I'm generalising, but I think in a lot of Asian culture where there is a long history of same-sex culture and transgenderism, and this is often integrated into various religions and into cultural practice. For example, the Hijras, they traditionally earned a living by bestowing blessings on major life events like births or marriages. But at the same time, this isn't formalised through whatever system of law people live with. And so, I don't know, I think perhaps it leaves people in this funny place where, you know, where certain aspects of their gender diversity or their sexual identity are celebrated, for example, this ceremonial place that Hijras have, but then all the other rights that should be associated with being a free and equal member of society, such as, you know, things to do with adoption or marriage, for example, or just freedom from discrimination, they aren't recognised. And so you have this funny existence where you're, I suppose, an accepted but second-class citizen in your own country.
Yeah. It's dichotomous. I think it's time for another song. So we've got Kash Kale coming up for you now. So Kash Kale has been hailed as one of the groundbreakers in Asian underground. So it's a kind of fusion of electronica breakbeat style. So this is a bit of his electronica stuff. It's called Dancing at Sunset.
Hola, mi nombre es Félix de Colombia. You are on World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
You're back on Joy 94.9 on the World Wide Wave. We're the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. And today we are in India.
And we are about to hear from the wonderful Arvind Naran, who works for the Alternative Law Forum, a civil society group of lawyers based in India. And they represented Voices Against 377, which was the group of NGOs and individuals that brought a case in India which overturned the criminalisation of homosexuality in 2009. So Arvind will speak now about how things are getting better for LGBT people in India.
Today I'm interviewing Arvind Naran from the Alternative Law Forum. The Alternative Law Forum is a group of lawyers based in India representing Voices Against 377, a current case in the Indian Supreme Court looking to confirm the decision of the Indian High Court decriminalising homosexuality. Arvind, welcome.
Thank you.
Could you tell me a little bit about this case?
The case is basically one which challenges Section 377 of the Indian Penal Code. Section 377 of the Indian Penal Code of 1860 criminalizes what it calls carnal intercourse against the order of nature, and that has traditionally been used and interpreted against the lesbian, gay, bisexual and the transgender population in the Indian context. And the case was filed at the Delhi High Court level, and the Delhi High Court came out with a marvelous decision which affirmed the fact that lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender persons are full citizens of India and entitled to equal rights under the Constitution. The Delhi High Court basically made the very important and far-reaching observation that lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender persons are entitled to the right to privacy, the right to dignity and the right to equality. It used language which basically implied that we cannot subject the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender persons to arbitrary notions of morality. They made the point that the majority might have a moral position, but the moral position of the majority cannot hold hostage the rights of the minority. So they basically articulated a notion, referred to as constitutional morality, meaning that any notion of morality which is put forward by society has to conform to the standards of the Constitution. And it's only if it conforms to the standards of the Constitution can we think of, can we accept the standard of morality. And it was a decision of the Delhi High Court which came out in 2009 and was followed by widespread celebration in India by both the LGBT community and their supporters, because it was really a marvelous charter of rights.
Can you tell me a little bit about how the High Court decision has been used by civil society in India since 2009?
Right. What the High Court decision did is it set in place a certain kind of rational discourse on issues of sex, gender and sexuality. Till before the Delhi High Court decision, you could always think that the word sex is associated with the word perversity, or the word homosexuality is associated with the word perversity. But suddenly after the Delhi High Court decision, you have the word sexual orientation being associated with the right to dignity and the right to privacy of a section of the Indian population. So it really, it's almost magically transform the discourse on LGBT rights from a conversation about perverse and dirty sex to conversation of the equal rights of people under the Constitution, under the Constitution of India. And in a very concrete way, if you spoke to a lot of young people around the time of the decision and after the decision, they'll point out to the decision as being a significant moment when they realize that they're full and equal citizens in the country. So it really, what it did is lifted the burden of criminality off the shoulders of the LGBT population in India and allowed them to assert with complete confidence that they're equal citizens under the Constitution of India.
Wonderful. Do you have any perhaps specific stories of people that you know or LGBT community groups who have been able to do these things that you just mentioned?
Well, it was just interesting that, I mean, when you speak to, I mean, I was speaking to a Hijra person who was basically an activist in one of the organizations, and she referred to the fact that, you know, the judgment which we fought for on the streets and because of which we're free today. So people in the activist community feel a sense of ownership of the decision. So in a sense, also interesting, because, I mean, I'd made the point that the judgment is really in some ways a community-influenced, even community-authored judgment, because it uses the languages which of the LGBT people and takes it to a... and puts it within the frame of constitutional law, as it were. So, yeah.
Can you tell me about the current appeal at the Indian Supreme Court and the group that's bringing that?
Yeah. The decision happened on the 2nd of July 2009, and on the 7th of July 2009, we had the first appeal filed against the judgment by... he was an astrologer. And that was followed by 14 other appeals. And the appeals were by Hindu, Muslim and Christian religious groups, as well as the Delhi Commission for Child Rights. So in a sense, before you knew it, I mean, we were just in the beginning the process of celebration, as it were, and within 7 days we had this seemingly massive opposition which had coalesced against the LGBT community. So after some discussions, we said that let's try and take this issue forward in terms of building key support for the petition, for both NAS Foundation and the other interveners' voices against 377. So then through discussions we came up with the idea that maybe it makes sense to have interventions to support the Delhi High Court judgment. And we were very surprised to see the kind of interventions which really came up after that. We had one intervention which was by 14 mental health professionals who basically intervened in the Supreme Court to make the case that homosexuality is not an illness as far as the current mental diagnostic standards are, and homosexuality is but a natural variant of human sexuality. Then we had teachers, 16 teachers, who also filed an intervention, making the point that LGBT people exist as both teachers and exist as both students, and that the fight against Section 377 is part of a wider democratic framework. It's part of the right to equal wages, it's part of the right for women's right to emancipation from domestic violence. It's really continuum of a broader spectrum of rights. And the third intervention was by 19 parents of LGBT persons, filed from every regions around the country, as it were. And their assertion was very, very simple. They're saying that they made the point that Section 377 is really an affront to the notion of respect for the Indian family. Because their point was, what Section 377 does is it makes it difficult for parents to have conversations with their children, because children are ashamed to own their sexuality because the law criminalizes a part of who they are. And secondly, it makes parents really afraid that their children could be arrested at any moment in time. And these two are consequences which are really not acceptable within the framework of a democratic country, and therefore 377 should go. So we had this range of forces really arrayed before thee.
It's the World Wide Wave, and you were listening there to Arvind Naran. He is from the Alternative Law Reform Group in India and representing the group of organisations, the Voices Against 377. Quite a little collective, the Voices of 377 there. So teachers, parents, women's groups coming together, coming out in support of keeping homosexuality legal in India.
Yeah, a really diverse group of people. Interesting to see no religious groups on board.
In fact, religious groups on the opposition. 5 days after the court ruled on that homosexuality was legal, Hindu, Muslim, Christian groups and a child protection group got together and raised an appeal. 5 days.
5 days. But I think something that you see in these big human rights-based cases, especially when morality, in inverted commas, is involved, is that someone will always have an appeal prepared just in case. It's like, you know, preparing an obituary before someone's dead. You just have to have it there in case their worst-case scenario comes true and, you know, civil rights are granted to marginalised people in society.
I like that 14 mental health organisations were were prepared as well and ready to say homosexuality is not an illness.
Yeah.
Great.
And you mentioned morality there, and what Arvin was saying was that the parents and the teachers groups were coming out and saying they felt that Section 377, which made homosexuality a criminal offence, did not respect the Indian family. It actually caused problems for the parents. So these parents groups, and we're going to hear more about this in our next clip, coming out saying, I guess it's the reverse moral argument, saying that the law in itself is moral.
So therefore making it shameful to talk to their kids about it. The kids can't talk to their parents about it. It's a difficult situation.
And it's a funny thing because family is always the sticking point, it seems, when people try to moralise about anything to do with, you know, same-sex attraction or gender diverse people, that it's to do with the children or to do with the family. But it's nice to see that the arguments can be just as easily flipped and people can say, actually, our rights to family mean that a life free from discrimination is something that we deserve in order to see those out.
Now, you, in fact, might have an opinion on this, or maybe you've been to India and had some experiences. Send us an SMS in the studio. That's 0427JOY949. We're on the phone, 1300JOY949. Email is onair@joy.org.au, and we are live on Facebook, a worldwide wave.
Uplifting, informing, empowering. Joy 94.9.
That was Hindi Sad Diamonds, or Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, and you might recognise that from Moulin Rouge.
With Nicole Kidman.
Yes. So that's a bit of...
I think she had a nose back then.
She had a nose?
Yeah.
Her own nose?
Her own nose, maybe. great song, though. Do love that version.
Yeah, that's a bit of Hindi pop. It's like K-pop.
K-pop.
Maybe we should call it H-pop.
H-pop. It might take off. You'll have to trademark it. It's the Worldwide Wave, and tonight we have stopped off in India.
And we're about to head back to our interview with Arvin, where we asked him about the role of parents in this case.
Could you tell me about the intervention that was brought by a group of Indian parents?
Basically, this was an intervention filed by 19 parents of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender persons. The parents were basically came from almost every socio-cultural background, and they came from many regions in the country. And perhaps what captures it most powerfully was a video clipping where on national TV, we had these three parents with their three children sitting on three separate sofas. And the parents who looked at them, they looked very traditional Indian women because they were wearing the traditional sari, they had the bindis, and they looked like every traditional Indian mother. And when they spoke what the most radical gay rights activists in India might be saying. Basically, they're making the point that Section 377 criminalizes an intimate aspect of the lives of our children and it should go. So that was a very powerful and very moving intervention. Also because what it did shifted the debate just from the terms of the law to the wider public. Because suddenly you have the wider public which is really looking at this entire TV show and seeing the fact that within the Indian context, there were parents who had lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender children. So it wasn't really an issue which is foreign, it wasn't an issue outside there, it's an issue which existed within the very Indian family.
You mentioned earlier that of the appeals that have been brought, many of them have been brought by religious groups, but another group you mentioned was the Delhi Commission of, did you say, Children's Welfare?
Yeah.
What's the grounds of their appeal?
See, the grounds for their appeal are that basically what 377 does, I mean, is that it allows for the abuse of children to take place. That basically the law is something which legitimizes the fact of homosexuality, and homosexuals are linked to the question of child sexual abuse. So that's the kind of link they sought to break. But the grounds from under them rapidly shifted away because the government of India, after some time, passed a law. I mean, just after the appeal, passed a law, which is about protection of children from sexual abuse. And they had a law which covered the question of sexual abuse in greater detail. So let me explain this a little better. I think I was not very clear on this. The Delhi Child Rights Commission, one of their grounds was, of course, that homosexuals are paedophiles. That's one kind of ground. The second ground was Section 377, the law itself, was used to both protect children as well as target homosexuals. because the law, there's no law on child sexual abuse in the Indian context. So they made the point, which is a legitimate point, that how do children get protected under the law? As to the first ground, that for example, homosexuals equals pedophiles, the coalition which was, for which we were the lawyers, which is Voices Against 377, was a coalition of women's rights, child rights, and LGBT groups. So there's a child rights group there as well, saying that 377 should go. Because, once again, from the point of view of a child rights group, or a child rights perspective, children could be gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender as well. And if they're growing up with a confused sense of who they are, with a lot of conflicts about who they are, because the law criminalizes who they are, then that's something which is deeply offensive, deeply injurious to the child's sense of integrity, assuming the child is lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender.
Voices Against 377, you mentioned, has community groups including, did you say family groups? And
yeah, the Voices Against 377 was a coalition of women's rights groups.
Women's rights groups.
A child rights group, which is called HUC, and LGBT groups.
Okay. Yeah. If the current case that's sitting at the Indian Supreme Court does confirm the decision of the High Court, which decriminalises homosexuality, practically in India, can you see the effects of this trickling down to all levels of society or being upheld by different levels of government?
The point we've always got whenever we're in dialogue with the Indian government is we can't do anything about LGBT rights because 377 exists. In that sense, this block which the government has, or this fig leaf which the government has, to say that we can't do anything because 377 exists. We've got a sense from activists from other regions of the world who struggle with very similar issues, be it in the African context, be it in the Caribbean context, or be it in the broader Asian context, that if change can happen in India, it can happen in our societies as well. I think the impetus for change finally comes from people who advocate the issue at the ground level. And if the Indian decision plays some role in creating a sense of hope, then we really aid that process of change.
And that was Arvind Naran, from the Alternative Law Forum, representing the group Voices Against 377 in India. I love his concept of, you know, the real change starts at the ground level. And you look at the groups that they've got involved, parents' groups. Interesting, they, as a part of their group, Voices Against 377, they had a child rights group. And when the appeals are coming through from the religious groups, they have a child protection group. So children are really in the middle of this debate.
Children tend to get stuck in debates like this, don't they? Because when people feel like I think their moral or religious grounds are falling away, the thing they cling on to is this idea of the family and what should legitimately constitute the family in their eyes. So it's nice to see that people are there sticking up for the rights of children in this, because obviously children of same-sex couples and also people who are young enough to be children and also same-sex attracted are very affected by laws like this.
Now, there's not many role models in India of out and proud gay people. There is one, however, in the royal family. So speaking of family, one of the princes in the royal family, Manvendra Singh Gohil, is an out and proud gay man. Now, he came out in 2006, which caused headlines around the world because he's being a part of the royal family. Let's say that it didn't go well. He was pretty much thrown out of the family, but he's come out just a few or about 3 or 4 months ago and said, you know, it's the best thing that he's ever done, a weight lifted off his shoulder. So how do you think that might invite change in India?
I mean, seeing as he came out in the most, I don't know, I guess, courageous way possible on the front page headline of a local newspaper, certainly people would be talking about this. This wasn't a quiet coming out to family nor at a ceremony. This was something that was published in the local press that people would have been taking home. So, you know, hopefully seeing a public figure come out without fear of reprisal, particularly in the context of India, would be something pretty valuable, I think, if you're an LGBT person.
Prince Manvendra has also talked about gay men in India being forced to marry. 75%. He estimates of gay men are married, forced to have children, living unhappily, ending in divorce.
And in fact, he supports a charity that works with the married women of gay men and sort of negotiating that. It's the attempt to be a social norm, but in fact it causes all sorts of problems. One of the other things that he does bring up, though, is the role of Bollywood, and it sort of gets back to this visibility. He's sort of saying that Bollywood is changing its the way it sees homosexuality, and there are some real stories coming out and films that portray gay people in a, you know, a very normal way. There was also a reality TV show that had an openly lesbian on there in prime time.
I find it interesting that there's no Hindi word for gay. So how can they talk about it when there's no word for it?
I wonder if... I know there are lots of words to describe each different transgender group as they identify themselves, so perhaps the words are so kind of historical and ingrained that there's no word for gay because there are so many different types of gay. Maybe. I'm speculating.
Now, we've got a bonus interview for you on our podcast, so you can hear from Mr. Gay India, the first Mr. Gay India representative to Mr. Gay World this year. I caught up with him in Belgium and had a great chat about his journey to become Mr. Gay India, and it's fascinating. So tune into our podcast. You can go to joy.org.au/worldwidewave. It'll be up there sort of later in the week, and a really interesting interview there. This is the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
This city, everywhere I go, I see faces I know. Out of time, I still have distant dreams here in my mind.
That was Nitin Sawhney with Distant Dreams. He's another London-based composer and DJ, and he's also very heavily into the Asian underground scene.
Very smooth sounds there. Not what to expect from India, which is where we have been tonight, investigating the changes going there and the current defence of the decriminalisation of homosexuality. Time for us to look a little bit broader. We're going around the world. It's a worldwide wrap where we just take a quick look at what's been making headlines around the world. I'm going to kick off with Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka's had its first gay marriage, which has ended in arrests for corruption. A gay wedding was held in the capital, and basically there it was followed by a very swift crackdown by officials. Police and the anti-corruption unit swooped on the house, which was reportedly used as a gay meeting place. So this is a country which, being gay or same-sex acts, are a criminal offence punishable by up to 10 years in prison.
Now, I am back in Russia because I like talking about Russia.
It is the flavour of the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. And their ridiculous proposed laws. So yesterday, 2,000 people turned out in a rally in Berlin, and that follows the week before when 10,000 people turned out in a rally in Copenhagen to protest against Russia's proposed anti-gay laws, calling for a boycott of the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi. I cannot believe the Winter Olympics are going to be in Sochi. And there's a website called Out for Russia. That's out in the number four, Russia. And they are lobbying against the G20 governments, who are meeting this Thursday in St. Petersburg, and they want them to take action against these proposed laws.
Now, similar things happening in Singapore. We had a message from our friend Yung Fa in Singapore, who's a great follower of our show, and hello to you, Yung Fa. They held they've had a petition, about 200 people signed the petition against the Russian laws, and they went to deliver that to the Russian embassy. The Russian embassy called the police, and they were swooped on by 14 police officers. Four protesters, 14 police officers.
But little, hopefully
bit
this
of overkill, perhaps?
Huge amount of publicity from that overreaction will hopefully push the movement towards something positive. Let's hope, fingers crossed, for a good outcome there. In slightly happier news, we all know, of course, about the Supreme Court in the US overturning the terrible DOMA laws, the Defense of Marriage Act, which previously banned the recognition of same-sex marriage by the US government. And now the US Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is 80 years old, is going to become the first judge in the country's highest court to perform a same-sex marriage. So she will be marrying two good friends of hers, Michael Kaiser, who's the president of the Kennedy Center Performing Arts Space, and the economist John Roberts.
How fantastic. And what a great supporter there, an 80-year-old judge. One more, perhaps not quite so happy, a bit of a scrag fight in the US between the two Cheney sisters. So these are the daughters of former Vice President Cheney. Mary Cheney has come out just in the last couple of days having a go at her younger sister, so saying that Liz, who issued a statement opposing same-sex marriage, Mary has come out and said, "For the record, I love my sister, but she is dead wrong on this issue. Freedom means freedom for everyone."
Good on her.
Go girl. This is the World Wide Wave. We are taking you around the world one country at a time. Time for a bit more music. What have you got for us?
We've got a bit of Norah Jones. Now, you might be wondering why we're playing Norah Jones.
India Norah Jones. What's the link?
Well, Norah Jones is the daughter of Ravi Shankar. Now, if you don't know who Ravi Shankar is, he is... he actually died in December last year. The Indian president called him an Indian national treasure. Mm. He was the guru to the Beatles. So when the Beatles lived in India for a while during their psychedelic days, they lived with Ravi Shankar. And you can hear tones of Ravi Shankar's instrumental music in the back of some of their tracks as well. So he's a 3-times Grammy Award winner. And, yeah, Norah Jones is his daughter.
You're on the World Wide Wave and we're in India on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I am Fernando from Guadalajara, Mexico, and you are listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Hello and goedenavond. This is Elko, listening in from the Netherlands on World Wide Wave, the latest LGBT news and current affairs on joy.org.au.
It's the World Wide Wave. We've come to the end of the show.
Thank you very much to Arvind Narayan for speaking to us about what's been happening in LGBT rights in India. And if you want to check out the work that he does at the Alternative Law Forum, take a look at altlawforum.org.
And thank you to Yangfa for his messages and to Fernando on the front desk.
And next week we'll be talking about Georgia and how the Russian neighbours are dealing with what Russia are proposing.
Now, stick around. We've got the Vixen Hour coming up next with Christian and his cohorts. Stick around here on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.